Look, we do need each other more than ever before. The way we go about living life is leaving far more people behind than it is taking people forward. Right. And I think the way we go about it needs to be looked at again. It needs to be re-examined. We favour the strong, the bright, the bold, the glitzy and the glamour. You know, there's a lot of sparkle and fade in this world nowadays, isn't there? And we get the latest leader will emerge and we'll put their names up in lights and we'll go to their concerts and their conferences and we'll read their books, you know, 7 highly effective, smart things that I've said. And, you know, and then just as our attention begins to wane, another leader rises up and we don't even need to remove the old leader's name from the board now. It's all digital. So we'll just put the next thing up. And instead of asking the questions like, where are they and how are they? We're too busy going to the next conference, reading the next book, the 7 smarter things that this new person has said, you know, and we don't even skip a beat. That's kind of where we're at. And we're also like, we've become that way in the church as well. You know, we always put up the best and the brightest up the front. And, you know, and then, and just like the rest of society, they sparkle and fade very quickly. But we're too busy going to the next big conference to hear the next big speaker and hoping they'll get a TED talk or something. Oh, goodness me. That means I'm on the way out shortly. And I kind of feel a bit disingenuous talking here as someone who has spent a bit of their time being put up in front. But I want to talk, you know, rarely do we, you don't go to a bookstore and see the 7 habits of highly weak people, do you? But we've got a lot to learn. You know, I remember going to something called a beach mission. Has anyone heard of a beach mission? Right, this is years and years ago. They still happen to this very day where you go to the beach and you camp and you run programs for the kids, and it usually just allows the parents to get drunker quicker without children's supervision. But you have a great time. And in fact, I met a kid who I was his youth leader in those days. He lives in Potts Point now. And this is in Anglesey in Victoria. And he says, I'll always remember when you broke all the rules, John, and allowed me and the guys to sit in the back seat while you did burnouts. And yeah. But that was the memory he holds and cherishes, right? What about the Bible studies we did? What? Anyway, at the end of that, we all sat around, 45 of us, saying, you know, we all held hands on the final night and said, we're going to do this for life, guys, aren't we, guys and girls? This is what we're going to give our life to. And I'll tell you what, the 3 or 4 of the biggest, brightest leaders of that time, they're gone. You know, I don't think they even would attend any kind of community or be involved with it because they were put up in lights and pretty quickly they crashed. But there was another 40 people who we never talk about. The people who decade after decade just faithfully plod away, that never end up on stage, never end up at conferences, never write any books, sadly, and who are indispensable to their communities and to their families and to their congregations, and to the world. We have a lot to learn from them. How do we miss it? Now, I'm always scared to teach from the Old Testament, and particularly to talk about King David, because we know it didn't end so great, right? And that's a whole different set of lessons, but I think there's something to be learned from the start here, from the middle sections, from the early parts of his life. Because what matters to God isn't what usually matters to people. God doesn't look at the external appearance. God looks at our hearts. He can see the humility that is contained within. This story comes from the Old Testament where Israel's already had its first king, Saul. And he's ended up doing what most leaders do, which is making it all about him and taking power for himself. So God says to Samuel the prophet, go down to this little hick town to a man with a girl's name and go spend some time in this out-of-the-way village because I've found the next king amongst them. right? And so Samuel goes to Bethlehem, which was at the time in the middle of nowhere, and he finds this guy called Jesse, and then Jesse calls out his sons, and he gets them to parade, and seven sons. And immediately Samuel assumes it's Jesse's eldest who is the one who is to be anointed. Who's the eldest child here in their family? Why would he choose the eldest child? They're the best. They're the original.
Well, everyone needs a rough draft before they get to their final copy.
Oh, did you hear Kieran said everyone needs a rough draft before you get to your final copy? Yes? They do. Yeah, yeah. Why does the youngest kid give us the most biblically correct answer here, right? Well done. That's right. You know, we assume, you know, we say the biggest, the strongest, they were given the lion's share of the inheritance. They were the one to continue on the family name, you know. And this is a great scene because it's got to be him. And then he works out, no, it's not. That's not who I've chosen. And he goes through all the other seven or so sons and it's still not there. And to the point where he says, have you got any other sons or any other kids? It's very patriarchal, sorry. Have you got any other kids? And Jesse can't even remember this one's name. It's like, oh, there's one more with the sheep. Like, I don't know what's happening here because I've never forgotten the names of my children, right? Have you ever run through the list and included the dogs before you get it right? you, Jesse, Samuel, Belle. Oh, Kira, right.
Went to grandma's name once.
Yeah. The most insignificant one, the one whose name they couldn't even remember, the one who was left out in the paddock, the shepherd tending the sheep. That's the one who they finally called in. And God said, this is the one. God backs the most unlikely people. If there's any message I want you to hear, is if you feel unqualified, if you don't feel up for it, then you're probably the right person. Right? Something special is going to happen in you and through you. That's the thing. It's not the best and the brightest that sparkles and they fade. It's the ones who are the least likely. You've got to know that. Right? Now, just say someone were to walk in the back there and come up to you and say, oh, right, let's do it the royal family. They said, oh, look, let's just pretend we all love the Queen and the King, right? Just so they walked in and said, you're the one for us. And I got this story from a guy called Mike Pilavachi. Imagine if they came in and said, oh, look, we're looking for the next monarch, right? And, you know, Prince Charles is getting too old. And William's a bit dodgy, and we're definitely not going to have Harry, right? But we've chosen you, right? Let's just anoint you. What would you do next?
You don't mean me.
Well, you probably would say that. That's because you're the right kind of person. But just say they said you're the next monarch, hey? You'd probably say, see you later, guys. You'd probably say to your boss, I'm out of here. I'm going to catch that plane. I'm going to get fitted for a nice suit and a crown or a gown. And I'm out of here, right? But what did David do next after this? He went straight back to the field and he went to be a shepherd. And that's what we can learn. That's what I want us to talk about just for a couple of minutes here. First, but the other thing I've got to say is, can you imagine, who's got older brothers here? Can you imagine getting all the glory in front of your older brothers? What would that feel like? You'd know the second the adults turned their backs, you were copping a hiding. So, why would God choose the youngest, Kira? What would you think?
I'm not going to answer.
Your older sibling's not here.
Right?
Who's the youngest here? Why would they choose the youngest? Nice, I like it. Sitting back watching it all.
Sorry, what was
that? Why would they choose it? Because they've been sitting back watching it all. That's a smart one.
Unspoiled.
Unspoiled. So all younger siblings are unspoiled. Is that right? What about that kid in the middle eating chocolate for breakfast? So the older sibling, are the youngest ones unspoilt? Do they never get spoilt? Don't they get spoilt the most? I think. They're teachable. Yeah. So he goes, yes, Duda.
They have humility. Mm. It's been drummed into them.
Actually, Dad's a younger sibling, so...
they have humility beaten into them. I like that. So what happens in the desert, right? The desert is lonely. The desert is boring. The desert is a painful place. What can you learn in that space? Resilience, exactly. You can also learn you get water out of a cactus. Thanks. That's good. That's the place where formation is. Loneliness and boredom and pain are the places where spiritual energy is stored. And I'm not saying that there's a magical, you know, orb of energy that floats that you discover only by being in the desert. Is you learn these things. In the loneliness of the desert, we see that David learnt some of the most, wrote some of the most beautiful poetry the world's ever seen that we still sing and recite to this day. Where would a young kid learn Psalm 22? Lord, my Lord, why have you forsaken me? He learnt the pain of isolation and loneliness there. He knew the pain of what it felt like to be abandoned. Where else would you hear the heights of the Lord is my shepherd? You don't learn that in the city, do you? The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down. You learn perseverance. You learn to be resilient in those dark places. You learn to be a good shepherd. You learn to protect. You know, there was a time there later on where, have you heard of this story called David and Goliath? Yeah, these are the two, right? And so all the soldiers are waiting and there's this oversized guy who says, let's stop the bloodshed. How about I come out, the big guy, giant Goliath, and I'll take on any one of you and the winner wins. And the whole army just kind of cowered. And David wasn't even there as one of the soldiers. He was coming there just to bring food or a picnic for his brothers and sisters, right? Isn't it funny? The person that was used was the one who was serving. Something there. But David knew what it was like if a lion attacked. David knew what it was like if a bear attacked. He knew how to protect his flock. He learnt what it was to be a good shepherd. His character grew. See, we've all got a task. But someone once said to me, don't let your call take you where your character can't keep you. Right? Don't let the purpose and the mission of your life take you to places that you can't handle because of your character. And where is character forged? In the dark, lonely, boring places. I want you to contrast that with our society. How does our society deal with loneliness, boredom, and pain? Distraction, exactly. We are the kings of distraction. Yeah. Our neural centres are activated in the same place with social media than they are with opioids. You know, we're just distracting ourselves as quick as we can. We're running away from pain. Is it any wonder we're coming up with leaders that last about 5 minutes? In all sectors of society. Quick fix. Fast food society. Has anyone ever ordered anything on Amazon? Amazon. The first time I ordered something on Amazon was about 20 years ago. It took 6 months. I'd forgotten I'd ordered it. And then they dumped it on the front doorstep, right? 6 months. Do you know there's a thing now called Amazon Prime or something? Or Prime Plus? Do you know how long it takes from click to it arriving?
12 hours.
Less than 12 hours. It can arrive up within 2 hours. You can have an idea and it can be in your hand within 2 hours. An instant society. A drone, actually, in some areas will come and drop it off at your front door. Instant fix, instant gratification, instant food. Let's be honest, who has gotten angry if they've had to wait more than 5 minutes for a coffee to be made? You're like, what are they doing? What are they doing? Are they roasting the beans out the back?
Growing them.
But we can feel the anxiety rise up within us, can't we? Like, what's going on? Or, my hamburger's taking 4 minutes. Do I get that free? You know? I'm just naming what's in us all, don't worry. But we're so part of this instant society. You know, we have more and more food allergies now than we ever have before. And we're a bit polarized because most people then tend to suggest we're just getting softer, we're getting weaker. But if you look, the processes and the processing of food and the seeds we're using and the genetically modified crops means that we are eating food that no human body has ever consumed before. Right? That's why our bodies are saying, whoa, this is not right. And that's why we have more intolerances and allergies and all sorts of things on the rise. But never before have we been unhealthier, right? We're eating fast food that doesn't satisfy, that we need more and more of physically, mentally, emotionally. Obesity used to be a sign of wealth and affluence. Now it's one of the hallmarks of international global poverty. We're just shoving it in our mouths, right?
Comfort food.
Never before have we been more unhealthy as a society. You know, if you sat in a restaurant lately and they say, oh, this steak could take up to 20 minutes, you know, or allow some time, we usually don't order it. You think, what, 20 minutes? Oh my goodness. But we're going after things that do not satisfy. Which is affecting who we are as people. And we're spending our time desiring to be like our celebrities and the people we put up in lights instead of just attending to the little tasks placed before us, where we learn resilience and character and how to handle boredom, how to handle pain, how to handle loneliness, very unpopular topics. How to sit with it. How to sit in darkness. How to find God in that space. But you know what? This world, which is starving on junk food, needs people of character more than ever before. It's craving the real thing. And that's each of you. As unlikely as and unworthy as you feel, let me tell you, you are chosen. This guy here, Adam. Does everyone know Adam?
No.
Yep. Turn around, Adam.
Hey.
That's a bit classic. Stand up, Adam. Legend. How long have you been with us now? At Wayside?
Maybe 6 months or so.
6 months or so. He's been here 6 months, probably playing guitar for about 5 months. You still don't recognise him most of the time. And how long did we work together?
7 years.
7 years. Sit down, mate. You can. I know you're dying right now. He doesn't end up the front. I do embarrass him just to get him to see your face, right? But week after week, he is the best youth worker I've ever seen in the community. Now, last night we had this couple over for dinner who we love dearly, and they're the most gorgeous young couple, but I've told you about this boy, who's now a man. He was facing jail, facing some serious amount of time in jail at 15 years old for something he'd done. And in the midst of his kind of pain and hurt, he kind of cried out to God and said, God, if you get me off, I'll make my life good. And you know what? You can't be what you can't see. And so when he decided to turn his life around, who did he model his life on? Adam. The guy who had picked him up day after day, week after week, who had shown him what love is, what a stable young adult male looks like, right? Completely changed his life. In fact, to the point where this guy kept hanging out at our house and then at Adam's house, and we were just ringing each other up saying, is he at your house? Yes, what's he doing? Not much, he's just looking, you know. But what he was doing was he was modelling himself on Adam, saying, who is there for the community the way I want to be there for others? It's Adam. He looked like that. Adam was the real thing, never with his name up in lights. I wish they could be up in lights. They should be up in lights. But he'd hate that, which is what makes him exactly the right person. That's the kind of person you are invited to be. To sit there through the difficulty, through the harshness, through the pain, and through the uncertainty, knowing that there is a God somewhere there with you. And then you can offer that to a world that is starving on fast food and quick solutions and knows it's not satisfying them.